You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Let's talk about SEO quickly, this whole search engine optimization thing. People are frustrated by it, confused by it, and there are so many SEO tools out there. Free ones, subscription ones. Which one's the best? Do you ever feel like it's been this dark art, this mystic craft hidden for only certain people to understand? Well, here at Jelly, it all became clear when we started using Ahrefs. The reports we got, the clarity on site ranking, and so much more. Today, for all our clients, we provide Ahrefs reporting and use the tool to audit sites. It's the premier SEO tool that gives you the confidence you're providing top-notch reports and data to your clients. Let the only confusing thing be how the tool's name is said. Check them out at ahrefs.com.
Well, thanks everyone for coming to another week of Marketing Jam. This is a very special one as it has been many years coming for Fab and I to reconnect. For years there, Fab would come out to Vancouver for what was called Google Partner Events. And we would host these events one time in an airplane hangar, helicopter hangar, one time at Hootsuite's headquarters. They would love to host us there. And it was amazing, engaging, exciting, inspiring, really educational. And so, Fab, thank you. I know we can't meet in person, but this is the next best thing.
This is great. I love that we get to reconnect. And those events were easily some of my best career moments in terms of memories. You guys were so gracious as hosts. And like, yeah, that airplane hangar, just for context for the listeners, I think we did one event downtown Vancouver, and then you put us in a helicopter to go out. I don't know where it was, but it just like the... Okay, so and we've got to go out there in the helicopter and do another event there. So it was just like the most once in a lifetime sort of experience in terms of getting to see British Columbia from that angle. Just amazing. So yeah, thank
and
you.
And even in context as well, we even took you to Abbotsford at one point for an event, which was great in a
kind of
abandoned nightclub and the Terminal City Club as well, which is one of our classiest kind of business clubs downtown. So
yeah, you're making me miss the West Coast. It's I long for the day when I can travel again. But one of the places I got to hit up for sure is Vancouver and see you all again.
That would be amazing. So Fab, that those that don't know you, what is your story that got you into marketing and the role you're in today?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that I have like a particularly awe-inspiring story, but I started like a lot of people did in marketing, and that's in the consumer packaged goods industry. So coming out of school, this was 2007 was my internship, 2008 full-time, went to General Mills. So Nature Valley, granola bars, Cheerios, Green Giant at the time. So cut my teeth on those types of traditional brands. So a lot of retail work, a lot of general management in the marketing space, and very much like building brands and launching new products. About sort of 3 years into that gig, I had an itch to do something else. It was right around the time when there was only a handful of people in the office who had a smartphone. I happened to be one of those that then therefore qualified me to run the digital team at the time. I was like, all right, you seem to understand this stuff. You have an iPhone. Great. So I got to start with, these like legacy brands and build our first search campaigns, social media campaigns, a lot of rudimentary content marketing. General Mills for the longest time in Canada, one of the largest content marketing platforms for recipe ideas and offers and so on. And that became the window into sort of the platform space and what Facebook was doing, what Google was doing. And one thing led to another. I took a contract role at Google, and just it was like three or four people in the office at the time from a marketing perspective. And that role was the role that we met through, which was like, hey, can you help agencies and small businesses and then became large advertisers understand how to market on our platforms? And since then, I've just been sort of like bouncing around from role to role. And most recently, of course, for the last 5 years, heading up our marketing team as a whole here in country.
That's amazing. So one exciting announcement, Google has launched a bunch of products. And I'm just so curious to know about what some of the products are and what was it like launching products during COVID?
Well, yeah, I mean, this year, just in like, you know, I think it's been a difficult year for everybody, but a really great year to just learn what really matters within the context of our craft as marketers, what our audiences really care for. And, you know, so we're, you know, of course, we recently had our virtual launch events for the new Pixel lineup, the new Nest products and so on. But we've been, you know, switching to virtual content, virtual events, right from sort of the earliest days of the pandemic. Like in Canada, for years, we've hosted virtual training events. We have an upfront event that for YouTube that's always been in person, always been, you know, 1,000+ people and so on. And we had it planned. Everything was planned, booked, all the speakers done, all the content. We were ready to go. And of course, the, you know, world changes around us, and we had to turn this event format into a 20-minute direct to each individual marketer piece of content. And we, you know, we thought of ourselves as content marketers before that. But really, we knew kind of one type of content well, which was the written word, whether it's blogs, whether it's you know, white papers, that kind of thing. And so we had to learn a more visual craft for that brandcast event. And it's not too dissimilar from what we just had to do now on the hardware side of the business and learn how to launch products virtually. And I think it just actually, you know, it's exciting to learn new things, of course. And I think it allows us to cut through a little bit more, especially to our users who really are reaching out and craving this information and want to know more about our products. That core audience hasn't left us, and this actually just makes us all that much more accessible to them, because it's not a closed door event in New York and you're hoping that it spreads through traditional and non-traditional media. This gives our users direct access. And so I haven't got my hands on my Pixel yet, my Pixel 5. As I was saying before the show, I'm getting it, I think, next Wednesday or Thursday. But so I'm really excited about the lineup of phones, of course. I think you're a Nest fan, right? So so hopefully you're going to be adding another device to your family's household there. But yeah, it's I think that's what's been refreshing, is just, I think this year's been giving us an opportunity to cut the fat on a lot of muscle memory or like old behaviors that just aren't necessary from a marketing perspective anymore.
I remember we would do these large scale events that you would come in for, about 150, 200 people. And then between those, we used to get this box, and it was a Google event box. And inside of it was like a Starbucks gift card, a bunch of Google notepads, some pens, and a shirt. And then we would live stream in some kind of updates and training. It was really awesome. So I think you guys had figured it out before most.
It's great. I mean, like those events were amazing, but I just, like, now we, you know, and we're, look, like, I'd like to believe that we are still innovative and still as fast as ever, but the truth is we're quite a large organization, especially compared to those days. And when the pandemic hit, in the first 3 months following that, our team quadrupled the amount of content that we created. So just in those 3 months versus all of last year, by just moving people around and saying, look, I know you're not a writer per se, but you're writing now, and you're creating content, and you're going to come up with ideas, and you're going to mine our data for insights and all of these things. And so I think I applaud my team for just embracing the moment and doing this. And so, and of course, like, what panned out was not every piece of content was a winner. Not every idea was like the greatest thing ever, but on aggregate, we've explored new areas and have way more loyalty amongst our core audiences. We've come out with new ways of working internally with our own teams and have better insights than ever before. And so what I see coming forward for 2021 for us, because we're in the middle of our planning season right now, is that I just don't think we're ever going to go back to marketing in the same way before. And so, you know, if we can be thankful for anything of this year, it's definitely the silver lining of getting to rethink the way that we've been going to market in the past, and be able to embrace these behaviors without really any downside risk.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. And one thing about speaking of Google products, I think anyone who was a Spotify premium member got an early Christmas present with a Google Home device was sent to them I think because I was a Spotify member, it was awesome.
Yeah, I love those types of promos. They come and go really quickly because they're highly redeemed. But it's a great partnership, and we love people who use YouTube Music, but we love people who use Spotify just as much. And it's I think the Nest family is intriguing for me because there's so many different solutions that work, and it allows you to think about these products in a way that really suits your lifestyle. So for some people, it's really about the smart home and about controlling various devices and sort of nerding out on sort of convenient solutions with lighting, with other sort of things. For other folks, it's more about entertainment. Of course, like there's this security aspect of it. And so every time I talk to someone who's a Nest customer, it's one of these things where it sort of actually means something different for each and every one of them. So I'm glad you redeemed that offer. I'd be curious about what your guilty pleasure Spotify playlist is of the moment.
You know what? Okay, two things on that. On the Google, what happened with this was my daughter, who is 6, figured out, hey, Google, and will constantly ask to play Hand Clap via, Fitz, I think it's Fitz in the something or others, Tantrums. But she, so eventually we had to like figure out a way so she can't constantly have the same song playing all the time.
Yeah, you got to use a voice match and just get different sort of. Yeah, that's great.
but on Spotify playlists, I depends on the mood, depends on the time of day. So and sometimes I'll even just roll the dice and let Spotify give me a list of suggestions or a throwback. And I like it when Spotify kind of does that for me. It reminds me of my brother, Tyler, used to make me CDs all the time, like mixing. Yeah. It's like Spotify is like my brother.
Yeah, let Spotify take the wheel. I mean, my PR team is going to kill me for doing a 2-minute Spotify ad, but we do love them as partners, especially in the Nest space. So I'm glad you got to take part in that. I like it comes and goes so quickly that I inevitably always get a message from a family member or friend that's like, hey, where's the offer? Is it gone already? I'm like, yeah, that basically lasted 24 hours. Sorry.
Speaking of marketers right now, speaking of things changing so much, what are ways that marketers should be updating their goals, objectives in these kind of like uncertain, crazy times?
Yeah, we started chatting about this before the call, but like for me, there's a wholesale revision in terms of marketing process and the operations of marketing. So we've always been very big on goal setting and tracking our progress against, we call them OKRs, objectives, key results. And so we've had this very formulaic approach over the years to add some science to it. So there's an annual process that then is a quarterly process and so on. But inherent in goal setting and establishing targets or forecasts for sales or promotions or whatever it might be, is you need some level of certainty in the world, right? Whether and that certainty usually comes from the past being able to be a good predictor of the future. And of course, as we all sort of know right now, like the past is not a good predictor of the future because we're completely in uncharted territory at this point. And so very early on, we looked at that and realized that a lot of our marketing process for establishing objectives and measurement was fundamentally flawed now. We just have bad data in the soup there. So one of the things that we switched to early on our team was shifting away from strict goals and more to general principles. So I wanted to give my team more of a set of guidelines or rules of thumb where on any given decision that they're trying to make, focus on this product versus that product, on this campaign, what would be the North Star metrics, give them a framework that they could better make those decisions. So for example, like often, we get into conversations about things like, you know, what's the long-term strategic value of something versus the short-term profit, right? And picking one versus the other can have you behave in very different ways, because you would prioritize different products, different partnerships, different marketing tactics, whatever it might be, brand versus digital, retail versus non-retail, all this kind of stuff. And so that was the kind of space where it was really important to give my team a set of overarching principles. So, you know, I won't get into the nitty gritty of it, of course, for obvious reasons, but I might say, hey, for these two sets of products or these brands, they're still vital for us in the long-term future of the company. And even with the challenging times that we're in, I want you to prioritize sort of long-term metrics. And that's and so I'm not going to give you the hard targets, because I think like it's anybody's guess what consumer confidence is going to be in 3 or 4 quarters. But I want you to think long-term on this. On these businesses, I want you to be much more short-term profitability focused. And so when you're thinking about marketing tactics and choosing which media vehicles, when you're thinking about which partnerships, I want you to think about what will drive the most amount of near-term dollars in our bank account. So these types of principles were really helpful. Principles like in the ad space, I'm not going to be looking over your shoulder every day, but just make sure that you're helping small businesses recover through the pandemic. Like that sort of like guide line for the team. So that was one thing that was really, really big, is just switching how we actually establish goals. Certainly measurement is symbolic of the same sort of ethos, where we felt like, you take something that was really critical for us, or sort of just like a standard thing that we would do, which market level comparisons. So it's very common for us to say, okay, we're going to take Toronto and we're going to take Calgary, and those are our two comparison markets, A, B, and we're going to do this here and going to do this there, right? Well, when Toronto and Calgary are in different phases of a pandemic, different government policies, different user attitudes, that kind of stuff went out the window, and we couldn't do a lot of the basic type of measurement that was that we just considered sort of standard. So I don't know that there's like one way to have solved that, but I think a lot of it for us has been just the recognition that the past now is a very poor predictor of the present and the future. And so that was thematically, number one, it changed how we set targets. It changed how we measure things in post. And I think the other sort of like big thematic area is that we've been trying to, in our budget process and the way that we work, build in a lot more real-time flexibility. So it probably won't surprise you that the Google guy pulled all of his money out of traditional media, or at least traditional media that you have to buy in advance, and put it into digital, so that like I can flex up or down with audiences wherever they might shift. And that's actually in like for your audience, like it's relevant to say that I've taken a lot of heat over the years from our salespeople, because I've actually invested quite a bit in things like traditional TV. Like
you were doing a Chromecast, like the Chrome browser. You were telling the story about how you guys advertise on and everywhere else.
I remember. Yeah. So I've always been like, for my money, it's always been sort of like we used to call it flipping the funnel. And essentially we start with what's the targeting methodology, let's say, or the media vehicle that has the most amount of information, most qualified users. So I love search because it's usually people putting up their hand and saying, I want this product now. Great. So usually you kind of start with like a core of direct response there, and then you can widen that and with reasonable confidence for things like similar audiences and remarketing tools and so on, email retention campaigns, whatever it might be, and that's your like outer circle. And then you might get into sort of like more broad-based marketing vehicles on digital, like say like a YouTube masthead or something, or more sort of like demographic targeting or sort of in-market targeting, where you don't know that this person's like directly putting up their hand, I want to buy your car right now, but you know that they're interested in cars and they might be in market. You can infer that. And eventually you get to this point where you have less and less data, but maybe you happen to be fortunate enough, if like for your enterprise listeners, you might be fortunate enough to still have enough money to do out of home and TV and some of these things that we know are inherently a bit more wasteful, but their mass reach in nature. And so that's always been my marketing philosophy. It's just invest in what you know will work the hardest and just keep investing until you've fully topped it up and then you go to the next vehicle. And so, but this year, that is still the philosophy, but there's been this new wrinkle of, yeah, but the audiences are wildly shifting in real time. The economics of each vehicle are changing in real time. So like if you look at TV, right? So TV for us over the last few years has largely become sports. When we think about it from a media buying perspective, because that's where people are still really leaned in. It's live, very highly qualified audience, tends to be younger overall. But you know, as we all know, like sports was canceled and it's slowly come back, but it's come back in sort of an unpredictable way. So on a normal buying timeline where our media agency would come to us and say, hey, it's May, the TV networks want you to commit to your fall media buy, or it's now the fall of 2020 and we want you to commit to your January buy. I honestly don't know what the world's going to be like in that stage. So that's where I've been moving dollars much more to flexible and sort of or agile platforms. Not surprising that a lot of that is like YouTube for me, but we buy broadly against all of the digital platforms. And I feel like I'm protected then, because if you take the sports example, if sports comes back online, a league takes their time off and then they come back online, not online in the actual online sense, but they're on again. How do people consume sports? Well, they'll watch it on linear TV or non-linear TV, and then they'll go to something like YouTube, or they'll go to Twitter, and they'll go to Facebook, and they'll go to all these platforms to then talk about it. So I can still ride the wave up by having parked my dollars in digital, but I'm not locked into anything. So I think that thematically, the other big shift for us in terms of planning has been to be really agile. And I think the last one that's worth spending some time on, but this is more just general business management, is we've had to look in the mirror a lot and make tough calls on what we're going to cut and what we're not going to cut. And I think that when I compared early on with some of my peers at other companies, that's actually the hardest thing of all. The marketing 101, we can all figure it out, but it's the difficult internal conversations that, like, we've been working on this product for years. We wanted to launch it. Now the world has really changed. How do we cut all of the funding from that and go back to, you know, something else? Or those are the harder conversations, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. And you never know, right? Even what the market's going to receive.
Yeah. I mean, like, I joked on a conversation maybe a couple of months back, like, and sort of an internal meme for us is like, is this banana bread or is it e-commerce? And the reason we were asking this question is because you can't predict it all of it, like early on, like, you know, yeah, okay, the run on toilet paper is the thing. Then it's like, we're all making banana bread and that's a thing. And then like, jogging pants, exactly. So it's really hard to be ahead of the curve on those things. But at the same time,
trends could predict the future. It tells you what's now and what was recent, but the future, you haven't figured that out yet, right?
I mean, if we had figured that out, I think our marketing team would be a lot more sophisticated. I mean, I think like I give our team credit for a lot of things, but it would be nice to be able to have that sort of predictive ability. But those are really good examples, because I think the thing for us has been that, like, look, we're gonna sometimes just completely miss one of those blips, because who could have predicted them? But they go away just as soon as they've come. I think the stuff that we don't want to miss, and the things that we've been betting on. So if you look at like things like our investment in the retail space, like we spend millions in retail co-marketing and channel marketing, all this other stuff in country. And that's an area where I fundamentally am not betting on the world going back to status quo. Do I think we're going to be as sort of like an exaggerated position as we're in now, that like it's like that people can't physically shop in stores as much as they would like and all that? No, like there will be some like step backwards. But I think one of the things that was interesting for us was like when we saw all of the growth in digital commerce happening, one of the things that was really intriguing was that, like, I think it was maybe about 8 weeks into the pandemic, kind of looked at the data and saw the percentage of commerce being done online versus offline. And one of our retail folks just commented on us, you know, what's really funny is that, like, that doesn't even compare to the pre-COVID numbers for Asia and Europe and some more advanced markets. And so it shows you just how laggard Canada was in e-commerce as a whole. So for you to believe that we're going to go back to the pre-COVID numbers, that's a fundamentally like pessimistic view of e-commerce in this country and what our retailers are going to do. And of course, I think, like, you know, we're betting on all of our retailers, small through large, that are going to use this as a learning moment and recognize that, look, like, there's still some categories, of course, that you want to, like, touch the product, you want to talk to a salesperson and so on, but there's a lot more we can be doing in the digital space. Some of it's just about the product being available online, some of it's about digital marketing, some of it's about being able to transact, being able to ship products at a decent price point, and then sort of other tangents off of that, like only 1 in 10 of our retailers in this country are exporting globally. And so I think this year has been a wake-up call for the retail. And so when our marketing team looks at that kind of thing, I think we're going to place our bets, and we would rather be wrong thinking that it's going to stay at these very high percentages than to underinvest in that future, because I can't see how we, I was talking to my dad, who bought online groceries for the first time as a result of the pandemic. There are certain categories that he's going to want to go touch the avocado and know that he's getting a great avocado. But then there's an awful lot more categories where he's like, I never want to go back to a grocery store to go buy these staple items that I can just get shipped every week. So I think we, as users, as consumers, like, we're not going to forget those types of experiences. So we will always be a little bit more tipped towards e-commerce than we were in the past. So that's another example of a way that we're just viewing the world a little bit differently at this point.
I want to talk about explaining leads to clients. CallRail gives you the call tracking you need to measure the success of your marketing efforts in real time. Discover how many calls you received from your Google Ads, organic searches, social media efforts, and so much more. And hey, that's not the only reason we use CallRail. CallRail seamlessly integrates all of our call and conversion data with over 700 marketing tools and platforms, including Google Analytics and Salesforce, for a deeper insight into what's happening. Start telling the complete story to your clients. Try a free trial today with CallRail.com.
And thanks, Instacart now delivers Costco. And yeah, as a parent with 4 kids, I'm like, I had my entire Costco delivery brought to my house, and they're pretty staple items. Like, you know what you're buying, right? And you're regular. So
exactly. Like, and it's and hopefully that's saving you time, and you can, you know, have more fun with your family or time to read, sleep, whatever.
Like and I'm not doing impulse purchases, which again, yes, doesn't like, but my wife loves.
I somehow tricked myself into thinking that, like, so there's a local company called Fresh City Farms in Toronto, and a lot of the produce is from around the GTA, and then they have, of course, some, like, other items and stuff like that that you can get. And so I at first convinced myself, it's like, okay, the chocolate bar that I buy, I'll buy one for the week and it'll come in the delivery. And of course, like, sure enough, I still, like, go out for a walk and, like, I'll get, like, a dark chocolate bar from this local Sobeys or whatever, but I feel better about it because I'm walking. But it is interesting that, like, you, like, your impulses will still find a way. You're just like, they're
even late one night, this again, local delivery group called Legends Hall in Vancouver was like, you get all these local restaurants, and I was like, well, I haven't been out to restaurants in months. And all of a sudden I saw that, like, Shambar was on there and all my favorite restaurants. And so I started ordering all this food. And then we had to, like, somehow figure a way to get into my freezer. And then I had to send stuff to my brother, so he put in his freezer. And because, again, I was just impulsively throwing stuff in my cart because it was way easy. Yeah. And they're bringing it to my house in the week. So it's like, I think the opposite was also true, as I overbought because it was so easy to do.
Well, and the, I think you notice really soon, like pivoting back to the marketing conversation, is, and this is why, like, so we're working with a charity called Digital Main Street across the country, and collectively with us and our other partners have a goal of getting 50,000 small businesses in this country, retailers specifically, and sort of individual artists and entrepreneurs, getting them transacting online, which means, hey, you need a Shopify storefront and you need to be able to transact and get your digital marketing set up. And I think that, you know, what you're experiencing there is the businesses that are able to change and make these small tweaks that are so convenient for their customers are going to be able to not only survive the pandemic, but thrive going forward. Shopify had some data early on. It was in the first 6 weeks of COVID. And they, what they saw from their merchants, because of course they have those who have just offline services, and then those have both offline and online. And what they could see was that those who were able to transact in multiple ways, so our true multi-channel retailers, were recouping 90% plus of their lost revenue during that core time in the pandemic when everything was locked down. And so it gives hope to us that, like, okay, yeah, the way that we transact is one thing or the other, but you have to build in this resilience into your business model. And that's why digital is so so vital for each and every small business in the country.
Yeah. I was searching to see if anyone would deliver. My wife asked, what do you miss most during the pandemic? And it was like going down to Granville Island and getting these bagels, rosemary salt bagels from Siegel's, bagelry. And sure enough, they were not big enough. They're a small little place within Granville Island. But then someone ran this ad campaign, searching to see if I could get them delivered or something like that out here in the Valley. And Granville Island Delivery was advertising saying, we will pick up anything you want from Granville Island and bring it to your house.
Oh,
and
amazing.
So it was like, so I could actually choose between all my favorite little shops in there. So little shops that maybe couldn't handle the delivery side of it.
Yeah.
I put it in my shopping cart, pay the delivery fee. And then the next day I was eating a rosemary salt Siegel's bagel.
That sounds delicious. And having not really had lunch today, I'm very into that story. I love that anecdote. But yeah, I think we've got to do more as a country to help these small businesses, make the leap. I think for many of them, it's not so much about that they can't. It's just that it's a one or two or 10 person shop. And how can you be a really successful digital marketer when like your day job is just running the operations of a business? So I think we've still got to do more, but I hope that even as we, as in some places we start to open up, of course, like, there's wave two happening in multiple parts of the country. But I hope that, the businesses take this as an opportunity to learn new skills. I hope they take advantage of government programs and charitable programs and stuff from companies like ours for sure. And then I think for people like you, you've always been so good to the small businesses in your area, and just trying to be a marketing thought leader kind of within your sphere of influence. And I think that that's where, as an industry, we could also do a bit better to help those businesses that may not have access to an insights team and may not have an e-commerce division, like all that kind of good stuff, because a lot of these things are actually fairly easy to set up once you get going. It's okay, but it's just it can be a little daunting before you know where to begin.
Yeah, we run a school out of our agency called Jelly Academy, and we've now, I think it's almost like 600 people we've put through our training program, but our core kind of measurement of our school is Google Analytics and the Google Training Academy and getting your Google certificates, which has been amazing. Like the training that's available, the resources that are available, you're not charging for the certificates yet, but it's been an incredible way to educate people about the language, the acronyms, and just how to understand that world.
Love that. And we parked all of our information in the Google Small Business Hub. So if you just Google that, we've got our collection of It's a collection of information that we think every small business should know, you know, things like how to get listed on Google My Business to how to use basic products, advertising, G Suite or Workspace and all that kind of good stuff is there. And then we're trying to do a bit more. I hate to make this a plug, but I think what I'm most excited about is things like free shopping listings, where for our shopping sort of tab, that now gives merchants a way to get listed without necessarily paying for advertising, which I think has been a barrier for most mentally on how to get started on Google. So those things are worth setting up. And actually, even for like large retailers, they should be thinking about free shopping listings as well and how to integrate that into their full set of solutions.
We showing a friend that within the Google My Business app, if you've downloaded onto your phone, within there, they will help you get ads going. And it's just kind of a ads 101. And it's an incredible jumping off point for people just getting started on the Google Ads platform.
Yeah, it's great. And like the and of course there's other starting points and all due credit to sort of other platforms that can help small businesses. But I think the main message for me is that you just if it's not you, we used to say this at our events actually, just look to your left, look to your right, whoever came with you to this event, one of you has to be tasked with learning this and just getting going. And there's very, the only mistake I think at this point that you could make would be just to do nothing. In terms of the online space, I think anything short of nothing, you're going to make some progress, and there's going to be people there looking for your business, for your industry, and the opportunities are both local and global. One of the things that we've been trying to push as well has been a new tool called Market Finder, this one is. So it is a little bit, trying to take the sort of the insights that you can glean from things like Google Search, and it allows you to put in your website and sort of understand the product category that you play in. And going back to this export story, give you a report on here are the markets that are ripe for the type of business that you're in, the category that you play in. Another sort of off-the-shelf solution. My team and I have to do a better job in making sure that businesses across this country know about these tools. But I think, this is a relatively new launch. So definitely check it out. Use it as an agency with your clients. And then certainly if you're a retail business and you can transact online, Market Finders are just a really good first or second step to use in terms of your decision-making process, especially if you're starting to think about, hey, where might we sell this outside of country?
And speaking of which, you mentioned 1 in 10 are selling out of Canada. Yeah. We had the Honorable Mary Ng on the show, who's from Ontario, and there is $100,000 available for a business to want to export their product outside of Canada. So you're paying 75 cents on, or the government's paying 75 cents on the dollar up to 100 grand. So you're essentially getting 75 grand if you spend 100 grand to export your product outside. And that includes market research, online ads, digital promotions, getting your e-commerce ready. It's incredible.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think, one of the things that, and I don't think that the job is done yet, but I will give credit Minister Ng and other political leaders who've been able to put together these relief programs for small businesses. It's Ontario. We got a significant amount of funding for Digital Main Street and other partners to help bring small businesses online. I would love to see that in other places across the country as well, because I think that the job isn't done, but I don't think anyone's saying the job is done, but I think that that's where it's been nice to see that we've rallied together as a private and a public sector sort of working group at all levels to help small businesses, because I think it's only to our benefit long term. The pandemic is just a forcing function for us to catch up on a lot of things that Canada really needs to get right to be competitive for the next decade or more going forward.
So Fab, I need to ask, whether it's friends or family or someone who meets you for the first time, do you ever get asked about how does the algorithm work? Teach me the secrets behind the clock there and how do I can rank organically?
I think that's stopped a little bit more recently. I used to joke, like when I first got the job many years ago, we would joke that like, oh yeah, I cover letters L through Q and just like that's my job. No, I mean, we typically keep that as like church and state. Anybody that works in the ad side is not allowed to be at all involved with the organic side of the algorithm. I think I think that a bit of the certainly the SEO gamesmanship has gone away as we've tried to just focus on like what's the most relevant and being able to not necessarily focus on individual words or one specific signal and applying more machine learning to really truly understanding what does that user really want to get in this moment? What would be high value content for them? And therefore here's what is baked into a search results page. I think the better we've improved the product on that over the years, the less people ask me on how to game the algorithm, because I think that they kind of understand that's like, oh, it's going to point to the right content, right in quotations, like the most valuable content for that user, regardless of what tips Fab might have for me.
Speaking of content, evergreen content, I want to talk about. So I discovered over COVID, Mark Rober, who's a YouTuber who puts out these incredibly educational, inspiring videos. So I've never consumed so many YouTube videos, but I just, Zach King would be another one that I just fell in love with. He's like this magician, but YouTube and evergreen content. What's your advice to brands and marketers about just creating evergreen content and just what they can be doing on YouTube today?
Yeah, I think, first is that like video is still the most evocative platform that we have, right? Sight, sound, motion, like that's, it's everything there. So if you're thinking about a content strategy, both sort of like the macro level paid or not, video should be a very critical part of your strategy. But video can be contextual. And should be contextual. So you shouldn't have a one-size-fits-all strategy that is, hey, we create a 30-second ad that lives over here, and we're just going to port that over to other platforms. What we've been saying for years and years about YouTube is you should have a dedicated YouTube strategy. And I think for the first time over the last couple of years, what we've seen with audiences on YouTube and the rise of so many great creators like the ones you've mentioned is that YouTube is now should be kind of the first place in your brand marketing campaign, not a cousin to or an offshoot of something that you're doing offline, let's say. So like that's the first thing is that like once you successfully transition from a YouTube is part of my marketing strategy as a brand builder to YouTube is the first place that I think of, then you can open the doors to, okay, so now the content that I make on that platform is long form episodic content that is trying to build a more loyal following, whatever that might be. And then shorter form content that might be more sort of advertising based and, 6-second bumper ads or whatnot. I have to say that like on our side, the content marketing that has worked for us the most has been actually white papers and the written word. So we're heavily investing in something like Think with Google.
I love that e-newsletter. Listeners, if you aren't subscribed yet, Think with Google is probably one of the most resourceful e-newsletters out there.
That's kind of you to say. And we put all of our research there. When we do things like we have a series called Inside Google Marketing. So whenever we're saying that, hey, here's how we're marketing our products, often with our tools, that's where we're writing about it. It's on Think with Google. So I think that I am still a novice and learning how to use video in a meaningful way for our business. But it's what's clear to us is that what we've learned from content marketing side overall is that it's not a one and done thing. It's not something that's just like, hey, we're going to immediately get returns. Thankfully, I think we're past the generation of clients asking agencies for a viral video. Like I feel like that's dead now. That meme is gone. But the but it is hard work. Like if I look at what our team's learned in terms of content, it is, you know, we now have, you know, 4 or 5 people on our team who touch content. It involves everyone from the most sort of new person to the team right up to our most senior leaders thinking about what would be relevant for our audiences. We're regularly getting information from them. We're trying new content formats, whether that's video, whether it's podcast, long form, short form, publishing white papers, whatever. And it requires a lot of experimentation. So I love YouTube for sort of all businesses. I would resist the urge to make it a short-term strategy. And I would resist the urge to try to be relevant just in the moment, let's say. Like, so we published some research in, I think this would have been April, because we were trying to see what's happening on YouTube in the context of COVID. And what was interesting is that we were seeing that for brands that were making COVID spots, they were getting dramatically higher breakthrough in our testing, which meant that the audience was watching and paying attention, saying, oh, okay, you're putting something out that's relevant to me. But what we saw for most businesses was that even though you could drive breakthrough by creating video that was relevant in that particular moment, the thing that we were all thinking about at the time, we saw no significant lifts for most of those brands on impact metrics, consideration, intent to buy, like some of these things. And so my conclusion, and you can have multiple conclusions from it, but when I looked at this, and this answered the question for me about a lot, like it was relevant to COVID, but sort of relevant to a lot of our content marketing, is like, does everything that happened in the world require our commentary or our brand to be involved? So a fly lands on Mike Pence's head. Do we as a brand need to put something out in the moment just to be relevant? Well, that data showed me that, like, yeah, you can certainly get people's attention because it's relevant in certain top of mind. But is it going to make them think more highly of your brand, want to purchase something, want to, whatever, like all those things? Not necessarily. And so that's the other thing that I think about a content strategy is it's long-term, and you have to think about the long-term relevancy of that content, what you're trying to do, and not necessarily just be of the moment, I think is one of those things. And for us, a big learning from this year has also been the shift in how we measure our content marketing, regardless of whether it's a written or video or just audio. We've shifted to measurement methodology that's trying to get at the loyalty and shifts in sort of the underlying behavior in terms of their likelihood to actually purchase products. And we don't do content for every single one of our products and brands and that kind of stuff. In many cases, like, so I'm talking very generally, we do a lot of like first party content that we build for something like our advertising business, so our B2B content. And then for other things like our devices and services, we want people like you and people in the tech review space and all those kind of folks on YouTube to use our products, use our solutions, talk to our people, and have them be the way that we actually connect with people in an authentic way using a platform like YouTube.
That's amazing. One exciting update in Canada this year was Google Verified came to Canada for a few industries. So we've been doing that for some of our clients, and it's been really cool. Again, building that trust, showing the little badge on there. It's just been a really great enhancement to the Google My Business and the Google Maps listings.
You're the best at this. Like I talked to a lot of agencies, but like you are you probably wouldn't do this because you're so humble, but like for folks who are working with Darian and team, like we joked about this before the call. You know a lot of our local business products better than a lot of our Google employees even. So thank you for being such a champion of that. And I hope you give us feedback when things aren't working quite well for you.
Well, to go from level 7 to level 8 is very difficult, Fab. So I don't know who you can tell, but I'm just saying.
like I, Okay, I'll send a memo internally.
No, but it's been really cool to see you guys continue to push the envelope. And again, I think maybe some even listeners have only known Google as Google Search, right? Yeah. And maybe some are learning that, man, there's all these other options as you see ads within the kind of the Gmail world, display, remarketing, YouTube, just all of the options that are out there.
Yeah, which and the options can be a bit daunting at times. I think one of the things that's been really heartening over the last couple of years is as we do more universal or unified ad campaigns, so that you can establish sort of one campaign that cuts across many different surfaces for Google, and a lot more optimization that's done in real time by our machine learning algorithms and so on. So I hope we see more of that. I think that we can certainly work harder on sort of the long tail small business space, and hopefully things like this, the advancements in free shopping listings for those types of merchants are really helpful, and I hope that we continue to sort of push the boundaries on that kind of stuff, because I think that will make it more accessible for a lot of folks to actually start with Google. More than I think a lot of businesses will start with like a Gmail account. And I think that one of the things that we can certainly make sure that is as apparent to them is that Google My Business and some of these other tools and sort of basic ad campaigns are really great, first, second, third rungs of the ladder for you to build your business off of.
Yeah. And just two other things that people are shocked by about Google. Those that are on boards of nonprofits, charities, there is a grant for nonprofits and charities in Canada called the Google Grant. Make sure you check that out.
Yeah.
And secondly, Google Analytics, it's free. If you don't have it yet, grab it for your website, and you can set up goals within your analytics that let you know when things are triggered of things you want people to do. People spending more than 5 minutes, signing up for a newsletter, making a purchase. Having Google goals within your analytics is such an enlightening aspect to have to your site. If you don't have it yet, something you can do for free, and you can go to the Google Academy to teach you how to do it.
I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
Fab, this is incredible. Thank you for coming on the show. We have to do it again. And
yeah,
so much to share. I still remember you had the most amazing decks I've ever seen. I know maybe you were part of building those, but they were moving and they were glorious and amazing. So maybe one day we can even have you on and you can even share one of your decks and we can make it a visual.
I would be happy to do that. Always happy to hang out. So just let me know a topic and we'll pick a time. And if you want to talk about something like sort of like more narrow within marketing or just bounce around a little bit, I'm more than happy to hang out. Thank you so much for the support of you and your team, and we'll do anything to help you guys out.
It's awesome. So marketers, CMOs, small business owners that are listening, we're going to put a lot of the notes, websites referenced in the show notes. Make sure you check those out. If you're watching on YouTube, you can visually see this. So hello. And those that are, of course, listening on audio, thank you for joining us here. And we'll see you next week on The Jam.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded at the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editor, Travis Jeffers.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, You're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.